Welcome to The Ship Show. If you don't know why we call it that, you're about to find out. Jeff Newbarth is your host.
Welcome to The Ship Show, part of the Callaway Podcast Network, the ever-growing Callaway Podcast Network.
Yeah.
Les, a lot of people have been talking about Jason's shitty chef-driven podcast.
I know. I got a few messages about it yesterday.
Yeah, 8 episodes dropped. We want you to rate, review, and subscribe this podcast along with that one and email us at shipshow@callawaygolf.com. That's shipshow@callawaygolf.com or call us 760-804-GOLF. We are currently at the Grand Del Mar here doing a ad shoot with Phil Mickelson. So while Phil's doing some of the hard work, we decided to bother his brother Tim, who is currently Phil's caddy and former agent and former golf coach at Arizona State. Figured, Lex, you guys can talk Sun Devil a little bit.
Yeah, go Devils.
Go Devils. Love it.
All right. So thanks for taking some time to join us. We actually got some email listener questions for you.
Oh, great.
Which is crazy. So the first question is, what's the heaviest the bag has ever been? Is there a spot or a time or whatever where the bag has just been where you're like, what is going on here? And does your brother mess with you and try to change the weight of it?
Well, officially, I've never actually weighed the bag on a heavy day. But I would say the heaviest it's ever been is probably 45 pounds.
Okay.
It's about as much as our cameras.
Yeah. And on an average day, I would say it's 30 to 35. So 45 is obviously when it's rainy and cold.
And what's the craziest thing that your brother has ever requested go in the bag for a round of golf?
Oh, wow. That is an excellent question. I don't think there's anything abnormal that we've ever had to carry. I honestly can't think of anything extra that he makes me carry or abnormal. I mean, there's never been anything I've looked at and said, why are we carrying this? Except for one day I walked in and there was about a dozen Sharpies in the bag. Two's enough.
Yeah, but he signs a lot of autographs after rounds. So.
He does, so maybe three from now on. But a dozen, now they don't weigh a lot, but it still takes up space. But there's never been anything abnormal that I can think of.
Right, the other two questions I got is, what's one thing about being a PGA Tour caddy that people don't know but should?
I think one thing that most people assume is that we literally just do the numbers and read greens, but there's a big part of being a psychologist out there for your player. Every caddy has to be a psychologist for his player to some degree, some more so than others. You know, when your player talks to you, how do you respond to him to get the best possible response from your player?
And then the last one that people emailed me was, what is sort of, I don't want to, like, Stevie Williams used to go all sort of security guard for Tiger.
Yeah.
And I always felt that was a little contrived in the sense of where they kind of, you know, Stevie could sense when the mood got to a certain thing. And he was going to make an example out of somebody to kind of calm it down. Have you ever been in a situation where you felt like you had to play security guard for your brother out there?
Anytime we go to a tournament that has a big crowd, such as Phoenix or a major, the Ryder Cup, President's Cup, and we get outside of the ropes, I get a little nervous because after, you know, they're usually pretty good before he hits the shot, but after the shot, everyone starts to converge on him, and to me, that's not a comfortable feeling. And so that every time that happens, I'm trying to figure out how do we get him back into play without having, you know, people have the ability to put their hands on him, which you never think something's bad going to happen, but we've seen it in sports in the past, especially tennis, women's tennis
Monica
a long
Sellis,
time ago.
Yeah, yeah.
That's the thing that always comes in my mind, and so I'm trying to find the way to get him back, you know, safely back in play where we're not having to worry
there
about
was, there was a round, it was before you were on his bag at Torrey a couple years ago. It was on the back side, one of the par fours coming back this way, so at 14 or 15.
Okay, yeah.
And Phil was playing with a guy who used to be on our staff, Ryan Blum. So I went out there early, and Ryan asked me, he's like, hey, you know, we're playing this. So we wanted to have one of our photographers get some cool pictures of Ryan and Phil together because he hadn't played with them before.
Yeah.
And so that's something I want to have. So we made sure I was out there early to make sure we got that. And then Phil hit a ball. It hit kind of the side of the fairway. It took a huge hop and ended up kind of like right by my feet.
Okay.
So I moved out of the way or whatever, and he and Bones walked over there and kind of assessed the shot or whatever. Then he kind of hit it. They kind of was like, oh, hey, and just kind of kept walking. But I thought it was interesting because there are all these people who had this great moment of like, hey, we're going to pat him on the back.
Yeah.
And I'm just like, really? I would never think in a billion years that putting your hands on an athlete while they're competing is a good idea. But people think that way, and they do it all the time.
And if you hit a great shot, like, you know, if he's walking towards you, it's one thing. Maybe you give a high five
a high
if you make eye contact or something. But
yeah.
when you can surround him like that. Now, there's no other place you can really surround him. I mean, basketball, if you go off the court, you're going to have a people. It's just inevitable. But here you can have – you can get it so there's so many people around. And it doesn't really happen a lot, but it, every time we have it, I get a little queasy, like, okay, you know, how am I going to get back safely?
Yeah, I think that's really interesting because, I mean, funny enough, my like first experience with a golfer was with Phil when I was like 3 or 4 years old when match play used to be out in Tucson. And my parents will tell me, and I like don't have as much of a memory, but like he handed me a ball and said, like, there you go, kid. And it's like I was so close to him. I think people have this idea that they just want to be a part of like what he's doing, right? And they feel like maybe if they can touch them, it's almost like not this is like really extreme, but it's almost like Jesus, you know. It's like if they can touch him, they can be like, I was a part of like what he did there, and I like congratulated him. And in that way, fans tend to be a little bit selfish, right? Which is unfortunate, but that's okay. And I think it's cool that you have gotten this experience with him, especially at this time in his career, to be on his back and to, like you said, like help him. And who better than you to help him through some, like through the mental stuff, and especially in a time where the mental game is a really big focus in golf, right? How have you been able to really connect with him more, like as brothers and then also working together?
Well, the tough part is, I'm trying to be a psychologist, but he's the one that has a degree in psychology, not me. So I'm working against the grain, so to speak. But I think a lot of what we're doing out there is, you know, when you we're not obviously married, but married couples can think what the other person or say what the other person is thinking, right? And we've been able to start to do that where I'll start to, you know, there have been 10, 15 times a year that somebody hits a good drive and we'll say the exact same thing at the exact same time, things like that. So we think so much alike that lots of times when we go and talk about a shot, I already know what he's thinking before we've even talked about it out loud.
Yeah.
And so that helps in our process to do that. But a lot of it is when we're just walking down the fairway, how can you get their mind off of golf?
Right.
You know, so what's going on at that moment, whether it's talking about, we tried not to talk about politics, but, you know, sports that are going on. So maybe right now, if we were to be playing a tournament, we'd be talking about the situation with the Patriots and the, and the filming and stuff like that. Just anything to talk about anything but golf, because you can't focus on golf for 5 straight hours when you're out there.
Yeah.
You
know,
it's 30, 40 seconds at a time.
It's a big misconception for people, I feel like, because they think that, like, you're in it, that's like your job, and they're thinking of it as like they do their day job for 7 hours or whatever, and it's just not the same.
See, I think that that's something that amateur golfers don't understand, is that people say, oh, golf's about focus and being, you know, like, but you're it's just like football, it's bursts. It's when a play is over in football, you're running back to the huddle, and you're still in the game, but you're not at game speed, you're not your mind is off for a second or two, unless you're the quarterback hearing it in your, you know, your headset, or if you're a Patriot and you're just thinking, well, what did they film last week, and I know what's coming from the other team now. I'm going to take lots of shots at them today just because I can. But what is sort of like the other question is, like, when you go to a new venue, because you guys have a couple of those on the schedule this year, versus a venue that you've played, you know, a billion times. You know, we're super excited about Phil's involvement at the Amex Desert Classic. Callaway's going to be involved in there. We have a really cool user experience, which we can't talk about yet, but it's going to be incredible for those of you who are going to be lucky enough to be out there. But what's the difference between going to a place like that versus going to a course that you guys have never seen before, you know, whether it's for a WGC or, or an event overseas you're going to play?
The biggest thing for me is just making sure I'm prepared. You know, if you're going to a tournament such as the Amex or any or San Diego, you know, Phil's played it 20, 25 times, that he already knows everything about the course. There's no way I can know more about the course than him. But when we go to a new venue, I just need to be better prepared so that I can basically as efficiently get him around the golf course, or at least make sure he has the understanding and the knowledge of, here's what driver's going to leave us. Here's what, you know, 2 iron's going to leave us if we hit 2 iron. And 2 iron, you know, fairway's going to be 32 yards wide, and driver's going to be 26 yards wide. So things
so
like
that. Is that just going out and walking it?
Correct.
And do you also, do you talk to other caddies maybe who've been there before? Do you like to just, do you have a routine of how you're going to prepare your guy for the golf course?
A lot of caddies will take one or two other caddies with them to share in the responsibilities of finding, you know, sprinkler heads and stuff like that. I personally like to put in my AirPods and just go on a 4.5 hour walk and do it all myself. And for me, that's about as focused as I can get, is knowing exactly what I'm going to do instead of having somebody else sort of, well, my player's going to do this, or what. I don't want those distractions. So yeah. I personally like to just do it on my own. And it, you know, usually it's going to be a Monday or Tuesday, depending on when we get there. And let's say Phil wants to play 9 holes on Tuesday in the morning. We'll go play 9 holes, and then I'll spend that entire afternoon doing my prep work so that I'm best prepared.
So he's okay with that opening nine, if knowing you haven't done your prep work yet.
Yeah, because we know we're going to play the Pro-Am on Wednesday, and so he's going to see it then.
Yeah.
You know, and again, there's only one or two of venues like that. So if I have the opportunity to do it before he even plays, great. But if not, then yeah, he's fine with me doing it after that first nine on Tuesday, let's say.
What's it like when he makes changes, like, within his bag as far as equipment goes? Like, how does that adjust your approach to things? How soon do you find out? Because I think we get a lot of questions about what is actually in players' bags, even though people can look at it online. I know it's changing a lot.
Phil's changes all the time.
Yeah.
Yeah, Phil changes, I think, more often than others, but it's not drastic changes. Mm-hmm. It may be a different grind with his 60-degree or 64-degree, or it might be... He has two different 2-irons we use. Mm-hmm. One's a little bit longer, so it's going to fly 5 to 8 yards further than the other. So they're not drastic changes usually, but he does change a lot. When he changes the wedges, for me, it doesn't really change much because it's, you know, they're still going to go the same distance and things like that. But when he changes the 2-iron, that's when I need to know.
Yeah.
Because that goes
that's going to impact the next
exactly.
move. Yeah.
Exactly.
Are you involved when he does some of these changes? Like I think one of the greatest experiences anyone could ever have is be a fly on the wall while Phil Mickelson's club testing.
Yeah, I think that would be interesting. It is fun, and when it comes to wedges and grinds, no, because he knows so much more about wedges and grinds than I do.
That's why the wedge has his name on it.
Yeah,
correct. But when it comes to prepping for a tournament, as to whether or not we're going to use a 5-wood versus the 2-iron, or between the 5-wood, 3-wood, and 2-iron, which two will we have in play? There have been times where we've gone without a 3-wood and had the 5-wood, you know, and the 2-iron. There's been times we've gone without, obviously, the other two clubs as well.
Yeah, it's always so fascinating to me to kind of think about it. What's the coolest thing that you've been able to do having the last name Mickelson?
Oh, that's a good question.
Because the funniest part of this story was, so we were up at Napa.
Yeah.
And it was Monday.
This year?
Yeah, this year it was Monday. And I see you, like, running around the practice range, like not a little crazy, but you certainly weren't in your element. And what happened was, what, like 30 guys missed the connection. They were coming from Jackson, Mississippi, through Houston to come. So Tim had to play in the Pro-Am.
Oh.
So I'm thinking the Monday Pro-Am. So I'm thinking to myself, like, oh, my God, these, like, these four guys get their Pro-Am draw, and they see Mickelson. They're like, Phil's in the Monday Pro-Am. And then there's Tim on the
show. My poor team felt so bad when they got to the seventh hole.
You had, like, seven clubs or something, right?
Oh,
so,
gosh.
Yeah, I was walking the course Monday doing my prep work before Phil showed up, and the tournament director, Matt McAvoy, came up and said, hey, you know, do you have this afternoon open? I'm like, oh, yeah, totally open. What do you need from me? Thinking he needed a 20-minute, but he basically said, you know, all these guys missed their connection. Yeah. Can you play in the Pro-Am? I'm like, well, I can play, but I don't have golf shoes. I don't have a glove.
Yeah.
I don't have golf
clubs.
You
didn't have a putter at one point.
I had nothing, exactly. So Matt basically said, hey, don't worry about it. We'll take care of it. So I get to my cart, and I've got 8 clubs.
Yeah.
And no putter.
Yeah.
So I warned my group on the first tee, you know, and actually we had a great time.
Oh, good.
Came nowhere close to winning, but we had a great time.
Good.
But I think the coolest thing because of the name actually has to do with golf. And in 2010, I had the chance to go play St. Andrews for the first time. And it happened to be 2 weeks before the British Open was going to be there. The Open Championship is obviously they call it. And we arrived, and they allowed us to play from the tips.
Oh, cool. They
which
don't
is really
that.
Cool because 2 weeks before.
Yeah.
Now, I was scared out of my mind for that, though, because I had just taken a flight from the U.S. all the way over there. Mm-hmm. There's no range, so there's no warm-ups. I hadn't touched a club in 3 weeks.
Right.
Now, I've got a 150-yard wide fairway, so it shouldn't have been a big deal.
Only one person has hit it out of bounds on that fairway.
Correct. But my concern was, what if I chunk it and all of a sudden I leave divot on the first tee box that's going to be used in the Open Championship in 2 weeks.
Yeah.
So I teed up a 2-iron about 2 inches off the ground and sailed it down the center. But then after the round, also getting to go through the members, you know, clubhouse there. So obviously to be able to go and play where the game started was really cool. And to be able to play those tees with all the, you know, the fans, the grandstands, and the scoreboards up was a really cool experience.
Yeah, that town is I've been lucky enough to be there a couple times.
Badly.
It's really cool.
It's there's nothing like it, and I just love how I remember last time we were there in 2015. You know, we're just walking. We rented a flat right around the corner from the Dune Vegan, and you're just walking down the street, and you see, you know, Jordan Spieth and Ricky Fowler walking down the street, just going to get dinner and stuff, because everyone just stays right there.
Yeah, and it's probably a lot less of like what you would see in a city, like a U.S. city stop, right? Like people aren't like flocking at them. They can walk around and they're like totally normal.
Yeah. I mean, I think everyone noticed, but everyone just kind of like, oh, it's golf week. Everyone just kind of stay out of the way and let people do their thing and enjoy the experience. And there's so many cool things in St. Andrews to see, whether it's like old Tom Morris's grave or I like to find a pint or two. And they also have scotch.
You budget in
it's
your
keto.
It's
pretty easy to find those pints, by the way.
Yeah. I had no trouble. No trouble.
None whatsoever.
Well, Jeff budgeted for his, when he went to Ireland this year, he budgeted for his like Guinness. And I was listening to Phil talk about his coffee this morning.
Yeah.
We've touched on it like a few times. Do you partake in like the bulletproof brain octane coffee ritual?
So I will say that anytime I'm staying with Phil, like at a house for a tournament or whatever, he'll make me you know, a cup of the coffee, and I love it. If I'm not staying with them, I'll just do my typical Starbucks run, and you know, and if I'm early, I'll just sit there for 30 minutes and get on the internet. But I do like the coffee, and I think Phil and Dave is going to do very, very well when it comes out.
I know. I can't wait. So I'm huge into the bulletproof coffee, and my problem is today at this shoot, we don't have a lot of time. So the last thing I'm going to do is bring it up, or I'll derail everything for like 45 minutes.
Correct.
As I learn,
we want to get out of here before dark.
Yeah.
So,
but at some point, I need to have the conversation with him about it, because I'm doing my own kind of version of it.
Okay.
And I'd rather do the version that he's doing, because I just think that'd be cool. Because like yesterday, we on the podcast earlier this week, we had Henrik Stenson on, and the fun fact is that Henrik, Tiger, and I were all born in the same year. And the three of us have a lot of combined. So if I start drinking the same coffee as Phil, some of that's going to rub off.
I think so. But instead of talking to him about it, why don't you just wait a few months and then buy it in the store?
Well, I'm going to.
Oh, okay.
I'm going to. That's what I'd like to do is I'd like to do some kind of promotion on the Ship Show where maybe right as it comes out, we can give some away to some of our loyal listeners. So I think that's kind of a coach thing to
What was really interesting to me is talking to one of the ADs down on the set, because a lot of like film days end up being, you know, 12, 14 hour days or whatever. And the director was saying that a lot of female directors push for like a 10-hour day that has no break, no lunch or whatever, so they can go home and be with their family. So something like that, that like fills you all day, ends up actually being really perfect for these kinds of crews.
I didn't bring lunch. I had my coffee this morning and I'm good till dinner.
I didn't bring lunch either, but I brought extra protein.
Well, don't worry. They have a whole big lunch setup. All right, a couple more questions. We're here with Kim Mickelson as we're kind of wrapping up the Ship Show. Only a couple more episodes for us before we take a little holiday break. So that's kind of
literally
exciting.
Like two.
That's why I said
maybe
a couple.
Yeah, that's a couple.
All right.
Okay.
What is one goal as you guys start to look at 2020? What is something that when you and Phil have that private moment that you're allowed to share with us of like, hey, this is something that we should accomplish this year. Let's work towards this.
Well, certainly a goal is to get back in the top 10 in the world. First, we got to get back in the top 50, which, you know, for such a long time.
Yeah, forever.
Obviously, we just slipped out, but get back inside there early in the year, so have a good couple early tournaments, and then get back in the top 10. And certainly the ultimate would be to be able to win the U.S. Open at Wingfoot. And
that's where I was going to go to next. So, you know, we are starting to have our Fox production calls on that, and you know, that's the story, right? Yeah. Turning 50, Wingfoot, career achievement of the U.S. Open. There isn't a better script that can be written.
Last year was pretty good.
Last year
too. Last year would have been pretty good.
Last year would have been pretty good.
Yeah, it would have been pretty good.
But 50 at Wingfoot. That's something out of a movie. How do you prevent it from becoming like almost too much pressure or too much hype or whatever? Or are you and Phil just so isolated in that thing that it just doesn't matter what everyone else is saying?
Well, I think he's been around so long out here that he's been able to sort of drown that out and not think about it. You know, for a long time, he had to live with the best player to not win a major.
Yeah.
And now this, obviously, to win the Grand Slam. So, obviously, it's going to come up as to what happened last time, and he'll address that, I'm sure, early in the week. And then we just got to get down to business and focus on hitting fairways and greens. You know, and that's the big thing is we got to hit fairways and greens and put ourselves in the right spots. And that'll be my job that week, is making sure we know where we can and cannot miss it, both off the tee and into the greens, where we can get up and down. But like any U.S. Open, you know, we just got to find a way to hit the fairway at all costs.
So will you go to that one a little bit earlier to try to check that out? Because they have changed it quite a bit since the last time that the tour has played there.
Correct. So I was there was only maybe 2 or 3 years ago, the USGA four ball. So I was able to play it, but back then I was still coaching, so I wasn't even thinking about from a caddy standpoint.
Yeah, because Gil redid the greens in certain places, and I know he either softened some areas and I think just some general maintenance, right? When you when you have bunkers that get that much play, because so many members in those bunkers, the buildup you get around, I think he kind of sharpened that up.
Yeah.
I've heard from people it's spectacular.
Yeah.
And that the East Course is already, you know, they're already, obviously no one's going to play it. It's going to be very limited play. But what will you go like super early for that when you're on the East Coast?
So we'll find out. He usually tries to find a couple days, you know, whether it's 2 weeks before, 4 weeks before, where we can basically figure out exactly how we plan to play the course. You know, there will be times when we did this last year at Bethpage, there was one or two holes when we went 2 weeks early where we hit 16 tee shots.
Yeah.
You know, nobody was out there, so we had all the time in the world, and 16 tee shots, and five with driver, and five with three wood, and five or six with two iron, and figured out what we felt comfortable with. So that was going to be the game plan. So I'm sure we'll do something like that again. I may even go just on my own separately from when we go for 2 days, just to be able to get more numbers and get better familiarized with the greens.
Yeah, I remember at Marion, I was there. So the day that Phil came to Marion, he was there a couple days, was also golf's longest day with sectional qualifying. Okay. So we started off in Orlando in the studio, and then we had this idea to take Gary Williams and Damon Hack, and we got on a plane as soon as we got off the air and flew to Philly, and then ended the show at midnight with Kelly Tillman up there at Marion. And Phil was out there that day. Rory was out there, and Phil was out there. And on the 10th hole, similar experience, him and Pels were sitting there having this conversation of what is the exact layup number if you're not going to go for it, like do you want to be, and the difference between being 56 yards away and 68 yards away was spin profile, and it was you know, different hand position of a shot, and to think that that much detail goes into it, is that every week or is that major specific?
I would say major specific at this point. I think maybe earlier in his career when he was thinking about that, he probably put in that much time and effort to every tournament, but you know, after being out here 27 years, you know, that's a long time.
And again, here your whole life.
I wasn't going to say it, okay?
Yeah.
I wasn't going to say
it. Just throwing it out there for you.
Yep. You know, what can I say? I can't do anything about that.
All right. Well, Tim, thanks so much for taking a little time for us. I think Coach is right. This podcast thing could be in your future.
Yeah.
Do whatever you guys like.
Yeah. All right. That's Tim Mickelson. If you have questions for him, hit us up, shipshow@callawaygolf.com. We can always just ask him off air and get some responses. Next week, we will have two shows.
Yep.
Right?
Yes. We will have two shows. One with us, I believe.
Okay.
And another, hopefully, an 8:15 with a special member from Team THP.
Oh, right. Yeah. We talked about having one of a couple of their members on, but definitely
one
of their members who's a super emotional guy who was, the hint was he was at last week's grand opening.
Narrows it down to 13.
There's it down to 13 people. Well, 13 people, because they also have an assistant captain. It could be JB, but we'd never have JB on this podcast. But
sorry,
anyway,
JB.
Thanks so much for listening. Thanks for listening to Ship Show, and we will see you next week.